Mr. Stevens.
May it please the Court. I'd like to first touch briefly on the sentencing judge's remarks at sentencing. I think that having the full text of the remarks set out in the appendix to the appellant's brief contributes more to this appeal than I can do by rereading it or rewriting it. And I stand by my characterization that it's a jingoistic tirade.
And I assume that part of your request is the invocation of Circuit Rule 36.
To remand it to a different judge.
Right, if we were to accept your concerns about what this judge said and remand it for resentencing.
Yes. If the Court has any other questions about that, I'll move on to the search and seizure point. But I think it's very important, and I believe that the prejudice problem comes not so much with the particular sentence that was imposed, but can we be comfortable with the fact that drug quantities were fairly evaluated, and particularly when so much of the drug quantities depended upon a credibility finding of Rodney Smith. And
it seems to me it's not just, I mean, if there's a problem with this, it's not really just something specific like drug quantities. I would think it's more a problem that relates to 3553A, where the judge is in a more discretionary phase of the proceeding.
Right. I think it demonstrates an insensitivity to looking at both aggravating and mitigating factors, and that's definitely a further problem. But
I mean, because as for drug quantities, it seemed to me, at least that one could read this as the court's adoption of the PSR's finding on quantity, which is something judges do all the time.
And in isolation, if that's all that were there, I would say that would be sufficient to affirm. But you put that in the context of being asked to evaluate Smith's credibility. You put it in the context of there were mitigating factors presented concerning his family life, his working as a drywaller, the overall strength of the case. I mean, those are other issues that were certainly sentencing factors to be considered. So I think that's.
But you would agree he does follow what the PSR said on quantity.
He adopted it in the face of trial counsel's invitation to look at the credibility of witnesses.
Okay.
Of course, the trial judge sat at the trial, and the PSA, pre-sentence writer, didn't have the benefit of that. So I think that's another feature. I'd like to go to the search and seizure question. The defendant moved pre-trial to suppress the evidence and asserted in the motion in the brief in support of it that this was a warrantless entry into the defendant's home. And if we look at the burden of going forward at that point, the government then came forward with the justification that a written consent was executed in the defendant's kitchen, and that was the justification that was offered. But the initial statement that triggered this was the assertion that it was a warrantless entry into the home. Now, I agree that I have focused on the circumstances of the initial entry.
And he concedes that he consented.
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think that that's the language from the testimony.
In the transcript of the evidentiary hearing, he's asked, you know, which officer asked you if they could enter your house, Correa, and what did you say to Officer Correa? That, yes. And then what happened after you? So you gave him permission, correct? Yes. So I don't see why that's not permission.
I think that the officer testified that after he'd been arrested and handcuffed, and they were outside, and then he asked Figueroa if he lived there, and then asked him if they could go in and talk, and Figueroa did say yes at that point. And then the police knocked on the door, and Figueroa's wife opened the door, and the officers said that they were police and that they were coming in to talk. So this is the police officer who's supposedly getting the consent, and he's saying, he asked him if he lived there and could we go in and talk. And this is and I think that's really no more than the recognition of the police authority. I mean, I don't think Figueroa seriously could have said, "Well, why don't we go to the squad car instead?" Or, I mean, he's under arrest; he's under their control. They're taking him into the house, and I don't think that can be blown up into a consent.
Do you want to reserve a little time?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Stephen. Ms. Coney.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Jonathan Koenig. I appear on behalf of the United States of America. I guess I'll take the issues in the order that they were presented by my opposing counsel and begin with the sentencing challenge.
Under the standard Koenig, I have to say to you, I found the district court's comments here shocking. And the fact that in this man's sentencing, first of all, he gives a tirade about the drug wars in Mexico, and then he brings in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iran and Colombia and Venezuela, and then he compares Mr. Figueroa to Hitler and Hitler's dog and 6 million Jews being slaughtered, and he says, you know, people tell me those people ought to be strung up, those people ought to be hanged. That's just... How can anybody have confidence in a process and a 3553A weighing against the backdrop of that kind of language?
Well, Your Honor, let me take those comments in order.
I don't know that first, they're separable, frankly. I mean, this man sits here. When I read through this tirade, I just, each page was worse than last. Talks about the court reporter's son, you know. I mean,
well, I think the judge's comments about lawlessness and violence in Mexico are directly tied to an analysis of the nature and circumstances of this offense.
I don't think they're directly tied at all.
Well, let me explain why I disagree with you.
Suddenly we get meddling with a leader in Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, who's becoming friends with terrorists in Iran, and all of this is fueled by drug money. These are democracies, Mexico and Colombia. We wouldn't have our immigration problem. We wouldn't have you here. I mean, it's just...
Your Honor,
the point... And Hitler's dog?
I'm sorry?
Hitler's dog?
The point that Judge Randa was trying to make when discussing violence and lawlessness in Mexico is essentially the same point Judge Curran was making in the Gomez case. It's perfectly fair game. It's not a comment on anyone's ethnicity. In fact,
now.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's how these points are made. If a district judge in a rational way says, look, drugs are a scourge in the community and they harm people and you've been part of a very harmful process, that's absolutely fair game. And judges say that a lot. I've read a lot of transcripts. But when you start talking about stringing people up and comparing people to Hitler's dog and killing 6 million Jews and so forth, you're off the reservation.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think it's off the reservation to make the point that when you're dealing drugs in Milwaukee, you are part of a drug distribution chain that goes back to Mexico.
To Hitler?
I'll get to Hitler in a moment. But the point is a valid one. I guess I'll get to Hitler right now. The point the judge was making with Hitler is that everyone has somebody who loves
him. It's a very inflammatory, I mean, it really undermines the whole process. I'm looking at that part of the transcript right now. Implying in any way that Mr. Figueroa is the same as Adolf Hitler is just disproportionate in the extreme.
Well, I guess disagree.
Hitler's one of the worst, you know, criminals against humanity that the world has ever seen.
Which is why the judge used the example. Everyone has someone who loves him.
Oh well.
Now,
if
but
that's
to get
your position, I can't.
To get back to your point about Mexico, which I think was the focus of the
My focus is on the whole transcript because I think it undermines confidence in the sentencing process.
The only additional point I would like to make, because clearly we have a disagreement, is that the judge's comments about Mexico were sympathetic. He referred to it as a struggling democracy, a democracy struggling with the issues attendant to drug violence. I just don't see an ethnic commentary coming from this judge. Are the sentencing comments as disciplined and as tight as perhaps they could be? No. But I just do not.
I've never seen anything like it, and I've been sitting here for 15 years.
Mr. Koenig, is it your position that somehow it was triggered by the defendant's position that he was a military officer and posed drugs? Is that what caused the extent of Judge Randa's comments?
I think to the extent that there's some passion to the judge's comments.
Clearly,
it may have been provoked a little bit by the defendant's and his wife's comments in allocution, which were sort of along the lines of, gee, this is so unfair. I don't understand how I got to be here. I used to be fighting drugs, and I felt pretty good about that. And this is unfair. There's repeated references to being, this is unfair, this is unfair, unjust or unfair. We may have a disagreement, but from my perspective, under the standard that's articulated by the Second Circuit, there would have to be an appearance that someone was sentenced on the basis of their national origin. It would have to appear that way to a reasonable person, and I think while it might appear that way to someone with relatively thin skin on these matters, a reasonable person would not read that entire transcript, including the defendant's comments, and conclude that this judge was sentencing Figueroa on the basis of where he came from. So I'll shift gears, I guess, and talk about the Fourth Amendment issue, unless you have further questions concerning the sentencing issue. We argue in our brief that this issue is subject to plain error, and perhaps even a form of plain error that's pretty close to waiver. But I think, really, under any standard of review, the argument fails. Mr. Figueroa has just been arrested outside his house. He is in handcuffs. A gun was displayed at the initial part of this encounter. But if we take a snapshot of the situation and look at all of the other factors, I think the totality of the circumstances would suggest that this was a voluntary consent to the entry. Mr. Figueroa is a middle-aged man with a secondary school education. He's a sergeant in the Mexican military, as we discussed earlier. He had been advised of his constitutional rights. He hadn't been in custody very long, and he didn't need a lot of prompting. There were no threats or promises or even subtle forms of coercion. There were no misrepresentations about we'll get a warrant or we have a warrant or we'll do it whatever you say, no matter what you say. There's nothing like that in this case. And so I think it falls squarely within the line of cases that says you can consent to an entry into your residence even when you are under arrest. So we would ask you to affirm the conviction and the sentence. Unless you have any further questions, I'll rest in my brief.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Koenig. Mr. Stevens.
The government cited Gomez, and in my reply brief, there is a citation to the footnote in Gomez in the district court's remarks in Gomez. When you read those in full and compare them to what happened in the district court here, they are as different as night and day. And I'll just leave that comparison up to you. And unless the court has any other questions about the, I'll be glad to submit the case.
Thank you, Mr. Koenig. Mr. Stevens, I want to extend the additional thanks to the court for your accepting the appointment and ably representing the appellant in this case.
Thank you.